Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Dan Lynch. Episode 137 for September 29th, 2010. Plone. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show with free, libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you the show every week of the movers, the shakers, the interesting people, the unknown projects, the really well-known projects, little bits of everything, just lots and lots of variety. I want to bring on first, though, before we talk about our guest for today, I want to bring on my co-host. You've heard him here before. He's been talking to us for a while. It's my wonderful friend from the Linux Outlaws podcast, Dan Lynch. Dan, welcome back.
Hi, great to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Well, I hope you also notice, for those of you watching the video, what's unusual about what I'm wearing today, Dan?
Yeah, I noticed you're wearing a very fine T-shirt today with Linux Outlaws written on it, which yes. is fantastic. A little bit like mine, actually. I've got a different color, but a Linux Outlaws T-shirt as well. Yeah, available at all good stores.
So we're like twins. This is really cool. We're like twins. Great, cool. Actually, this is a shirt that you sent me after I was on your show. What was about? Was that almost a year ago? Is it time fly like that?
Yeah, I think it may have been a year ago. It's a while ago, yeah. It could be a year. It was certainly towards the end of last year, I believe.
Yeah, well, that's what's starting to be towards the end of this year, so that must be getting close. So enough about us, though. The whole reason we're here is to talk to guests. So let me introduce today's guest. I'm very excited about this show coming up. We have Alex Lemmy, I guess he goes by. He's one of the co-founders of the Plone project. Now, Plone is a web content management system that's designed to let you control the assets of your websites and be able to build up complex workflows and be able to... from what I understand, it's more of a higher-end software, so it's maybe not necessarily if you just want a little blog or something, but if you really have like a enterprise-wide, company-wide, and public-facing websites, this is a content management system which helps us put everything together like that. So he's one of the original founders of the project, been around, I think, about 10 years since the beginning of Plone. Plone is layered on top of Zope, as I understand. We'll have to ask about that because I don't quite know the relationship to all that yet. But that's who we have on today. So any last words, Dan, before we bring on our guest?
No, I don't think so. I have a big interest in Drupal and open source I nearly said Creative Commons systems. I'm getting mixed up. Open source content management systems and Python as well. So I can't wait to hear about it. Yeah, should be good.
That is the one downside. It's in Python, but I'll try to ignore that for this show. So without further ado, let's go ahead and bring on our guest. So Alex, where are we speaking to you from?
I'm now in San Francisco.
Oh, that's pretty close actually to the Twit Cottage. So this show is coming from all over the world. I'm here in Portland, Oregon right now. You're in San Francisco. We're all talking to Petaluma. And Dan Lynch, as usual, is in the UK, right?
Yep. Over in Liverpool in the UK, yep.
Very good. Okay, well, the show isn't about geographic disparity, so let's get into what the show's actually about. Now, I gave sort of a 30-second overview of what Plone is at the beginning of the show, but I probably did a really poor job. So why don't you give us first sort of the top-level view of what Plone is all about?
Mm-hmm. So Plone is what you might call a CMS, which is short for content management system, which these days doesn't really mean anything anymore. It essentially lets you put web pages online, and that's a pretty poor definition of a system. So what where Plone is different is it's based on Python. It's based on a non-SQL database. I wouldn't say NoSQL because that's a particular label that some people have adopted for a particular set of databases. And it's also kind of on the higher end, more like run your company, intranet, those kind of things, as opposed to blog online. So it's a pretty open system in the sense that there are modules to do pretty much anything from like forums to blogs and stuff like that. But in general, it's more business focused than a lot of the CMSs out there right now.
So let's step back a second. Let's take a look at a CMS. So a content management system, from what I can distinguish, is something where you're mostly uploading and modifying assets through the web interface, as opposed to what we used to do traditionally with websites, which is we put a whole bunch of content through FTP uploads and things like that on the back end and sort of manage it that way. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, that's a good description.
Okay, so... So here's a content management system. I'm interfacing through the web to talk to my my website or building, whatever I'm building. And you said this isn't necessarily if I'm just doing like a small individual site. This is more for large things that scales well for that?
Mm-hmm. So typically, you don't want to care about, you know, layout and colors and fonts and stuff like that in a professional context, whether it's a website or an intranet. So one of the things it does, it separates the content from the layout. So when you write an article, which you're probably intimately familiar with if you used anything like WordPress and stuff like that, where you don't actually do that much formatting. You do bold and italics, stuff like that. You attach pictures. But it always looks like the website. Plone is a little bit more focused around capturing assets. And also, you know, if you want to add... videos or files or stuff like that, and kind of keep all your company data in one location, that's good for that. And it has really good search capabilities. So it's one of those things where a lot of the systems where you put things internally, if you have an intranet, they have really bad search. So you really don't want to put your stuff there. You'd rather put it in, you know, Google Docs or something like that. But this lets you keep things within the company and still have good search.
So let's keep it. I want to start with a simple example to make sure that I'm understanding what the terminology is here. So let's say at the low end, maybe I just want to have a blog and I want to use Plone to manage my blog. I would have different steps to that probably. I would have, obviously, I'm publishing an article. So I've got some interface where I'm entering an article with its heading and maybe a pub date or something like that. But there's also the parts where I have to sort of manage like the look of my blog, where I've got like maybe a common header or maybe some archive indexes, things like that. And so what's the interface for that interacting to make that with Plone?
So Plone lets you do everything through the web interface. So you just need a web browser, and it works with pretty much any web browser down to IE6, which is painful, but it does. And generally, one of the major differences is that in Plone, what you're looking at is how it'll look like when you hit the publish button. There isn't a separate admin interface. It's similar to a wiki in the sense that you walk up to a page, you hit the edit button, and you edit whatever was there. And then you have the looks of your blog, which works the same way as in a lot of other systems, where you can download themes, you can make your own themes, those kind of things.
I think another defining characteristic of this, and I think this is what you're warming is when you talk about a larger company organization, is that you can also build up workflows. Like if I'm, you've got like the reporter, editor, publisher workflow, things like that. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so that's where I think things get interesting, because there are so many systems out there that just let you put web pages online. One of the things that Plone excels at is it has a workflow engine, which is short for saying it has predefined, you know, states for documents. So you can say this document is currently private. I'm going to send it in for review. It shows up in the review queue for the person that approves those kind of things. And then he can push it to publish. That's a very simple review workflow. Or he can send it back to you and say, these things are missing. Please correct this. And then it also has good versioning support. So if you change things over time, it's easy to keep track of who changed what and when those changes were made.
And how complex is this? I mean, could I set up like a business workflow too? I mean, one of the clients that I had, they bought this incredibly expensive thing that all it was basically to do was to gate a purchase request through like four or five steps before it finally got published to the end. Could I actually do that with this system?
Yeah, definitely. And it also has add-ons that do, so you can actually build these workflows through the web using, you know, modern web tools to build a workflow and set permissions and stuff like that. So what it comes down to, so I'm a user experience guy. So to me, the important part of the workflow is that you kind of remove the security part of the equation for the average user. They don't have to think about whether what they're doing has the right security settings. They put it into a particular state like private or pending or published or some other named state, and the system takes care of adjusting the permissions so the right people can see it.
And now, there's something that I'm kind of interested in as someone kind of approaching this from a mainly a Drupal background, if I'm honest, but certainly some other kind of CMS products, is I was reading up around Plone today. I was looking at what you call products inside Plone, which seem to be, from what I can establish, a little bit like modules would be in Drupal or maybe plugins in WordPress. Can you tell us a little bit what products are and how you would build one and use it within Plone?
So products are our historical name for what we now call add-ons mostly. And they're indeed equivalent to modules in Drupal or I think they're called add-ons in WordPress. I haven't used WordPress much lately, but similar things. So they're generally written in Python instead of being written in PHP, which is, depending on who you are, an upside or a downside. You can create simple products that don't necessarily involve a lot of code, mostly templates like HTML templates. And, you know, every system out there has some sort of scripting language to create these templates. And Plone has one that is very close to HTML. So if you know HTML or XML, you will be able to make templates in Plone.
Okay, so is that a bit like using Smarty or PHP template or one of these templating languages that we know from other systems maybe?
Yes, it's very similar to Smarty or PHP templates.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Now, as I mentioned, I do quite a lot of stuff with Drupal, and I've looked into Django a lot as well, which I know is another kind of Python-based web. Well, it's different. It's slightly different, I know, to what Plone is. But how would you compare Plone to things like to things like Drupal and then maybe Django as well?
So one main difference is that Plone is a kind of an end-user-facing product. So Django is more of a collection of building blocks, so you can build your own system. Plone does something useful out of the box. So it comes with, you know, strong security and authentication modules. It comes with integration for if you want to hook it up to an LDAP database to authenticate hook it up to other modules. It has a lot of functionality out of the box. It ships with a predefined workflow. It has all this stuff set up for you. So when you download Plone, which you can do at plone.org/download, you can actually get it up and running on your system in very short time. I would say, depending on your system, whether you're on Linux and you want to compile it or on Windows and you just click through the installer, you can have it up and running in 10 to 15 minutes. So the difference, I guess, to something like Drupal is very... it's not as set up from the start to do things out of the box. It has a lot of modules, but they're kind of lower quality, and there's a lot more of them, but they do less. It's hard to compare these things. So one of the things that's kind of difficult to understand is the difference between content management systems, what they do, because they all call themselves content management systems. But we tend towards, if you heard of Alfresco, I think they were guests on this show a couple of shows ago. They're closer to the market that we serve as far as Plone goes, whereas Drupal and WordPress and Joomla and these kind of things are towards the, I want to put up a blog, I have a $5 PHP hosting system, and that is the best way to do that. So we never sell Plone as a blogging platform because it's massive, massive overkill for it. You can totally run a blog on Plone, and I run my blog on Plone, obviously. But it's more in the systems that typically involve Java and those kind of things. So it's the kind of middle to upper level of content management. And we are very business focused compared to the more sometimes hobbyist approach. But, you know, all these lines blur. So I'm not trying to disparage anyone. And we compete also with SharePoint and similar solutions. So it's a very complicated space.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a great explanation. And one, I noticed you mentioned something just in your opening description of Plone about it using. I know you were careful not to use the NoSQL tag, but about it using these kind of modern databases which don't rely on SQL, like I'm assuming CouchDB and things like that. Could I install it with, I don't know, MySQL or Postgres or something, or does it all stand alone, basically?
Right. So it's a standalone thing. The database was essentially NoSQL 10 years before NoSQL was hip. So it's a production database that has been out there for I think 10 to 12 years. It's essentially the simplest way to think about it is it's an object database, and it's intimately tied to Python in some ways, where if you do programming in Python, it just becomes the store for the objects you produce when you do Python programming. That does mean that it's pretty closely tied to the system. So it's theoretically possible, and we do this. You can run Plone on top of things like Oracle or Postgres databases. The difference is that you won't be able to query that data using SQL. So it's more of if you have a replication system set up, a backup system, like a company infrastructure that demands Oracle, you can put Plone on that. That doesn't mean Plone suddenly turns into a SQL database. So
it would probably then be something like key-value pairs in a very fixed schema or something?
Mm-hmm. So essentially what the database we are using called ZODB, object database, it just stores the objects themselves, the Python objects. The upside of that is that it's you really don't want to store content management stuff in a grid database. So if you think about a relational database, it's not well suited for freeform content, whereas an object database is perfect for that. It's also a lot faster because we don't have to serialize back and forth between this storage representation that SQL has in their database and into our native format. So we turn out to be a lot faster at retrieving content from the database than a relational database.
Another thing that I think an object database would be better for is for hierarchical data, which a lot of your representations are. Your page is full of views, which is full of subviews and so on. And I imagine an object database is more naturally suited to that, right?
Absolutely. And that's part of the reason why we're using it, is that it's such a natural fit for the problem we're trying to solve.
So is this this object database, is this what Zope is? I'm trying to figure out where Zope fits in this picture.
Yeah. So Zope is a pretty old technology. It even has, depending on when you started working with Zope, you may have a bad impression of it. Most people tried Zope once, really. I'm not kidding. People using Zope once 8 years ago, and they couldn't understand it, so they gave up and moved on. And I don't blame them. It's a pretty complex system with a lot of moving parts. That being said, it's very well proven at this point, and it's been around for a long time, and Plone is its main consumer. So if you want to try to break it down, Python is the programming language you use. There's something called an application server that gives you a lot of these integration with the database, authentication, all these like very low-level services, and then Plone is an application running on top of that application server.
So Zope is the thing that's in the middle level you're talking about then.
Yes.
So Zope is the thing that has basically a web-facing interface, an non-object database, an authentication layer, and asset management of some kind, and that's about it. And then you're coming along and saying, and we're going to use all this to make what Plone is to the customer.
Yeah, that's a good representation.
Oh, good. I almost got it then. Yay. how does all that then, is there anything that Zope is doing that you can't get to from Plone, or is Zope effectively just encompassed entirely in this?
So it's kind of layered, right? So Python is at the core of everything. Everything is written in Python with a couple of exceptions where we use C, and then Zope has all the services, and then Plone builds stuff on top of that. So it kind of lives inside Plone. If I drew your diagram, it could be very simple or it could be very complex. But in essence, it's the thing that powers Plone. Plone wouldn't exist without Zope.
Okay. How does Zope scale? Can you do some sort of replication with it? How would I make this deliver, say, 100 pages a second or 1,000 pages a second? Is there a way to make this work?
Right. So one of the cool things about Zope and a lot of the things that we get for free from Zope is exactly stuff like that. So Zope has already a database structure that allows you to connect a lot of clients to the same central point of a database, and it also has solutions for replicating that database onto other servers. So out of the box, the Plone installer ships with two clients that connect to a central Zope instance. And the good thing is that you can just keep adding clients if you want to scale up. And then you put a load balancer in front, and you can handle more traffic. And then there's the front-end part, which is where people are usually used to scaling these things, like caching servers like Squid or Varnish, which is the popular alternative in the Plone world, where they make sure that most of the requests actually never hit the database. They just hit the front-end caching proxy.
So yeah, obviously for icons and stuff like that, you don't obviously don't want to go all the way through into a dynamic hit for that.
Correct.
So is this set up in the traditional then layering then? So I have like my caching proxy layer, my sort of web computation interface layer, which I think would be the Plone layer here. And then there's some sort of back-end tier of systems for the Zope database itself proper then?
Yeah, it's similar. So the difference, I guess, if you want to nail down some of the differences, is that the database runs as part of the Zope process. In some way. So it's not totally standalone. You can run it standalone, but we run it as part of the same process. And that's for performance reasons and, you know, replication and like synchronizing instances and stuff like that.
Now, is it multi-master or does that not make sense in this?
So I'm a user experience guy. At some point, my understanding of what the terminology in the SQL world breaks down. It is the way it ships out of the box is, clients that connect to a server that where the database lives. You can also replicate that, so you can have multiple databases that replicate, but that's not as a setup that is standard.
Okay. So I always ask the geeky questions. That's my job. So that's why I'm drilling down into this. Because I also want to, you know, I've built a lot of web systems, so I'm just trying to figure out kind of how this fits in with all the other things that I already know about. Let's go back a little bit, though. I want to cover some of the history of Plone. Where did it start and why? What was the itch that was being scratched?
Yeah, so this is an interesting part. So I was living in Norway at the time. I'm originally from Norway. And long story short, I didn't have a job. I didn't have anything to do. I was trying to learn this system called Zope. And I was on IRC, and I met this guy that was helping me out trying to solve my programming problems. So I do have a computer science background, but I'm mostly user experience, although that term didn't exist at the time. But I design user interfaces. So I met him online. I realized, you know, I can do programming, but compared to these people, I'm not that good at programming. So how about I help you guys make it good looking and easy to use instead? So he essentially had a customer. He's in Texas. So we just collaborated over IRC for a long time. And I would help him make things easier to use and better in the system. And then eventually we delivered this first intranet for this company. And then we said, well, this is reusable. Why don't we turn it into an open source project and other people can probably use this too. And that was about 10 years ago.
Now, how did you decide to make it an open source project? I mean, I know that that's kind of trendy now, but 10 years ago, that wasn't necessarily the trend.
Right. So, there isn't, in this particular case, it's easy to say, you know, the money here is in integration, it's in services. Like, there are over 500 Plone consulting companies out there that make a really good living doing Plone consulting and setting up and integrating these systems with company systems. So there wasn't really any incentive to charge for the box, if you see what I mean. So when you sell, when Microsoft sells SharePoint, which they've stopped doing finally, but you kind of give them a box for $5,000, right? And then you charge $1 million of consulting on top of that. So what's the incentive to charge for the little piece of code in the middle when most of the work is in the integration with your systems?
Now at this point, so what? When you're open sourcing this, what are you open sourcing? You know, 10,000 lines of Python code, and you know, layering on top of Zope, or is that where it was at?
Yeah, so Zope was already open source, so that made the decision easier, right? So we didn't have to open source. It's not of the nature where you build something on top of Zope, you have to open source it. And it's the same with Plone. Like, if you want to deliver a closed system inside a company and don't sell the solution, you don't have to, you know, open source it. But we thought it was the right thing to do. And we also thought Zope got a lot of things right, but they got it right on the wrong level of integration for the average user. Like, if you download Zope, it's the same as downloading Django. It doesn't do anything out of the box. So we decided to build something on top of that actually did something useful out of the box.
So I install this, and I've already got some web address I can go to that already has like a login screen for the admin or something like that?
Yep, that's correct. And then you can log in, you can add content, you can add files, you can workflow them, control, you know, visibility, you can create a hierarchy, you can install add-on products that do blogs or forums or stuff like that. So you're pretty much off to a running start there.
Now, the customization of it that these
multiple consulting companies are doing. They're mostly writing Python code to make it cooler, or are they mostly just trying to configure it correctly? I mean, what's their workflow like? What are they doing?
Mm-hmm. So they often do integration with existing systems. The content management system is usually the last thing to enter a company. They have an authentication database. They have, you know, payroll systems. They have all these systems already set up. And then people are like, oh, we need an intranet. So the system has... The system has to be very flexible in the sense that it should be able to talk to any like Oracle database or you know, those kind of things. So it's generally a lot of integration work. It's a lot of if you want to have particular systems live inside Plone because they're document centric, then you might want to have that application run inside Plone instead of on your Oracle cluster. And so there's a pretty wide range. And then you have the themers, right, which you have Plone, you just want to make it look pretty because you're running a public website with it. And those people can come in and help you design and implement a design in Plone.
Is this flexible enough that I could have, say, my entire internal company dashboard be done with this so that, say, my webmail would be one of the links and my workflow, you know, these documents need to be approved for a purchase or something, also just more links in the same pages?
Mm-hmm. So you integrate other data sources like everywhere else where you can pull in, you know, you can have this little box that does the SQL query and shows you some data that links into your purchasing system or your email system or things like that. So that one of the things we preach in Plone, which if you walk up to any other content management system and you ask, can I do X? They will say, yes, you can totally do X in our system because our system is the best in the world. Whereas we say, well, you can do that, but there are probably better solutions. If you're trying to do something incredibly, you know, relational mapping or email or stuff like that, we say, well, running an email client inside Plone is doable, but it doesn't make a lot of sense. So you probably have a better, you know, Gmail or another system that you can use for email that, but you can do it. So it's a very professional community, which is one of the things I really like about the community. They're not afraid to tell you if you should be looking at PHP or Drupal or Joomla or SharePoint or if it's a better fit for your needs. So it's a very focused community, and they have been doing this stuff for 5 to 10 years. They're, you know, consummate professionals. They absolutely are world leaders in content management and what they're doing. So it's an interesting world to live in because it's small in the sense of You probably never heard of Plone, but it is, you know, one of the top 2% open source projects in the world by activity and influence, according to Olo. So we're in a certain stage now where we haven't done a good enough job at talking about our system because we've been busy running our businesses based on it. So it's an interesting stage for Plone where we're trying to reach out, get some new people in and say, you know, look, there is a system over here that is not PHP based that you should probably look at.
So, bringing up the community, that's great. What's the size of, say, the core committers versus, say, maybe the inner circle of people whose patches are probably always going to be accepted versus, say, the occasional patchers? What's the levels of that?
Mm-hmm. So, stepping back a little bit, one of the interesting things about Plone is that it was never a company. So, a lot of times when open source projects happen, there is one company that builds something, then they open source it. And they are kind of the de facto supplier of those solutions. That happened with, you know, Drupal to some extent, Joomla/Mambo. It happened with, you know, MySQL. All these things come out of a single company. Plone came out of two people that didn't start a company together, which was one of the smartest things we ever did, I think, because it made it so the system is very flat and it's very much a meritocracy, right? So if you want to get involved, you can. One of the other things that you can tell it's a different kind of project when you look at who can actually commit to the core. There are almost 300 people that have a core commit access to Plone. And usually, in most other projects, that's 5 people because that's how they run their project. So it's relatively easy to get involved with Plone on the community side. And if you're willing to step up and maintain things and do things, we will let you. And we have, you know, of course, we have versioning systems. So if you totally screw it up, we roll back your changes. And we have a test suite that makes sure that everything works the same way every day and that you didn't cause any regressions in performance or functionality.
So I didn't hear any numbers there. So are you talking 100 people, 1,000 people all have commits or
what? So about 200 to 300 people have commit bits. Typically, at any one time, it's between 100 and 150 people that actively are committing code. So I think over the last 12 months, about 150 people have committed code to Plum.
Now, how does this relate to, are you also finding problems or updates to Zope? And are you sending those upstream, or do you, have you cloned Zope inside your project, or how do you keep that in straight?
Yeah, we work very closely with the Zope community, and right now Plon is the major, you know, user of Zope. So we obviously have a lot of influence and trust in that community because we solve the same problems. So many people from our community are extremely active in both of those communities, where the release manager of Zope right now was the earlier release manager of Plon. So it's all the same kind of bigger project, and in a sense where we really try to keep things on the proper level. If something needs to be solved in Zope, we solve it in Zope, not in Plon, just because we're Plon, you know. So we try to commit patches and fixes in the right location.
That sounds cool. One thing I was interested in, Alex, is I had a lot of questions about how would I deploy Plon, and how would I find hosting for it. But actually, from what you've said, it seems as if me as a kind of end user is not the sort of person who's going to come along, as you say, and say, I want a blog, I'm going to do it with Plon. It seems more like you're involved in the enterprise world. So is it more about getting a box to run Plon rather than going out and buying off the peg hosting to run it?
Yeah, so one of the interesting developments recently is, of course, that getting a VM or like a shared hosting server has become so much cheaper. So earlier, Plon was at a massive disadvantage because you couldn't just deploy it if you had PHP and MySQL set up somewhere. But now getting a dedicated box or a shared box with somebody else on something like Amazon or, you know, any of these virtual machine providers has suddenly become so affordable that you can package up Plon as a virtual machine and just deploy it out. And it's created for those situations, right? So you have a central database, and then you can just add more virtual instances if you need to scale up to larger amounts of traffic. So then you just buy more boxes, deploy the client to those boxes and point it at the central master box, and suddenly you have doubled your capacity.
Oh, okay. And that's what most Plon users would do, is have their own server. And so are there companies that sell, say, Plon hosting or something? So if I build an application on my own laptop or whatever, I could buy hosting off someone? Would I really need to kind of bring in an expert and set up my own VM or whatever it might be?
Right. So most of the Plon companies offer hosting of some sort, because it traditionally used to be much harder than it is. So they developed kind of this ecosystem of supplying hosting as part of their Plon services. And you can get free Plon hosting out there. And so depending on what kind of, you know, availability you want, what kind of professionalism you want, you can get pretty much Plon hosting from on any level here, depending on how large you need to scale.
Okay. So that takes out a lot of the questions I was going to ask about how do you integrate with Apache and stuff like that, because I'm assuming really you don't need to, because you're going to have your own box. And right. Obviously Zope is probably going to do a lot of the work that your traditional web server would do. So I was curious about how it related to stuff like the use of Mongrel in the Rails community and stuff like that, the way they farm things out between Apache and other servers. But it sounds like that's pretty much covered. One thing I did want to ask about is, you talked about the process of open sourcing Plon earlier, and I noticed it's under the GPL. So I'm always curious, why did you choose the GPL? Did you have a specific reason to go for that? And what are your feelings on it?
So personally, I'm a pretty strong believer in open source. Obviously, I work for Mozilla too. So it was one of the things where, when we started the project, we discussed what kind of outcome we wanted for our project. And one of the things that happens very often in the content management system world is that people fork off their own little customization space, and then they can take the solution that you've published, and then they can make their own white-labeled version of that and sell it as something else. You know, it fractures the community. It weakens the brand recognition, stuff like that. So we wanted to keep it so that it's a totally open community that you can contribute back to, and it should be incredibly easy to get involved and get your fixes in and get your changes in and get your, you know, improvements in the system, but we didn't want somebody to take Plone and all the hard work we've done, relabel it as MyCMS2, and sell it for profits. So it's less about the who makes the money and more about making sure that the fixes and the improvements come back to the original system, much like Linux.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. I know that you have a lot of conferences and stuff going on around Plone now, and that the kind of the Plone get-togethers and the development sprints and all that kind of stuff have really taken off. So how's all that developed over the years?
So that's another part where having been involved with a lot of open source communities, Plone is probably one of the most social and very happy to meet up and work on things and hang out and drink. And it's a fantastic community. I have so many friends in that community. So it's not a very insular community. You can easily go to a Plone conference, meet, whoever is the luminary in that particular area of Plone and hang out with them and discuss stuff. Everybody's very welcoming. Everybody's very inclusive. And most good things happen when we have conferences or what we call sprints, which are kind of focused workshops where we have 10, 20 people that, go to Switzerland and find a cabin somewhere in the mountains and we hack on something for a week. And then we come out and we have this start of a new project. So I would say it's very socially involved coding. There's a lot of things you can do when you know the people on the other end. If you, flame each other on the mailing lists, if you've actually had a beer together with that person, it's more fun, right? It's easier. You can you can be more efficient in your communication because you know what kind of person you're dealing with.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think you see that in a lot of big open source projects. Something that I did notice on your webpage was that you actually it says you get legal support and stuff from the SFLC, which is the Software Freedom Law Center, who I'm slightly involved with, they're good friends of mine. How useful is that to you to get that kind of support for Plone and for helping out with the foundation setup and all that kind of stuff?
So Plone has a long and interesting history around how the Plone Foundation came to be. So Plone is essentially, right now we have a nonprofit 501c3 foundation that owns all the code, all the trademarks, everything that relates to Plone. So you can't really buy or sell Plone as a project, right? It isn't two people that hold the copyrights. And a lot of open source projects have moved in that direction, but a lot of the CMSs are still owned by certain people, or the trademarks are owned by one person, and they can kind of, potentially sell that trademark to somebody else, or there can be bad things happening there. So early on, we recognized that it needed to be an independent unit. It needed to be a nonprofit foundation. And we got seed money from a computer associates help us out to start this foundation. And they provided seed money to get it started. Software Freedom Law Center got involved to help do the actual logistics of transferring the ownership of the code into a foundation, making sure we had the right contributor agreements for the people that provide code to us, and just making sure that everything was taken care of. And this was also back in the day when you probably remember SCO versus Linux, where ownership of code wasn't established, therefore SCO could drag out this ridiculous case of saying they own part of Linux, so you can distribute Linux. So we just wanted to make very sure that if you deploy something on Plone as a customer, you have complete confidence that the system is owned by one entity and they can never be sued or they can never be taken out of business in any possible way, whether that's legally or in practice. So we decided early on that we needed some professional lawyers to do this because we're not. So we contacted Evan Moglen and SFLC, and it worked out really well.
Excellent. Another thing I noticed, you mentioned that you're a kind of an interface guy and all that kind of stuff. And I noticed while I was reading up around Plone that you take a lot of care with, disabled access and stuff like that. And you're actually conform to the web content. I'm reading it from a script here, if you can't tell. From the web content accessibility guidelines. It's easy for everyone to remember. But that's a standard from the W3C, which hopefully most people will know. Is that important to you to be accessible to disabled users, and how difficult was it to conform to those standards?
So one of the things that is very goes through the entire Plunk community is this inclusiveness. And that inclusiveness includes access for people that have disabilities, if they're blind, if they have motor impairments, stuff like that. And also over into multilingual, which we're also very strong on. So, you know, one of the first things that happened when we open sourced our project was we got a Brazilian translation of the project. And then we realized we have no translation infrastructure. So we had to build one. But going back to the accessibility, it's one of the fundamental things about the internet is that it lets people that are differently abled be able to get a lot of information and you know, access all this information that was inaccessible to them before because it was only contained in books that were not available to the blind or similarly, it would be hard to get information to this, access to this information, to these people. And I think, you know, internet is a massive force of change in that regard, where if you do a little bit of work, you can make your stuff available to so many more people.
Mm. So you're a user interface guy from reading the bio about you. Now, your day job isn't Plone necessarily, right? You work for Mozilla?
Yeah. Right now, I'm a user experience lead for Firefox. And so right now, I'm busy wrapping up Firefox 4. So when Randall was trying to get hold of me here, he had to send me 400 emails before he eventually got through to me because my inbox is just out of control. So anyway, we're trying to ship Firefox 4 now. And I'm working. This is my first major release of Firefox that I've been part of the entire cycle as on the user interface and experience side. So I'm very excited about that, too.
And what attracted you to that project, other than the fact that you'd be paid for it?
So I've always worked in open source for a while. When I moved to the US, I worked for Google as a user experience designer for a couple of years. Google is a very good company. It is not as open source and as open in a lot of ways that I would like it to be. When I was no longer with Google, I get calls from various companies that should not be named in Silicon Valley. And most of them, I said, you know, you're not competing against any other company. You're competing against my open source project. And so when Mozilla called me, I'm like, well, here's another open source project that wants to hire me to work on their stuff. And that is interesting. So that's why I ended up taking a job with them. And, you know, it's hard to pass up the ability to or the possibility of influencing 300 million users using Firefox around the world. So it's a very, very challenging in all the good ways project. And it has a lot of improvements that can be done to it on the user experience side.
And how do you divvy up your time between Plone and your day job then?
It's very organic in the sense that it just, whichever project needs the time gets the time. Of course, you know, one project pays me, so I usually do my day job at Mozilla, and then but they're very, you know, they understand there's a bigger picture, there's a bigger ecosystem, you have to support all the parts of the open source ecosystem. So if I want to take time off and I want to go to a Plunk conference in Europe, then I get time to do that, and you know, no questions asked. Like it's part of the package that if you recruit from open source, then you have to support the way they do their work.
And, of course, being one of the founders of the Plone Project that now has had so much influence in so many different places, what's it feel like being a rock star?
I would say that rock stars of the Plone community are all the other people. I'm around to provide guidance and kind of sanity at critical junctures. But it's really amazing. Right? Plone also has a very, what we call, high bus factor. You know, like if I get hit by a bus tomorrow, Plone will continue, and no single person can be taken out of the Plone community or decide to fork the project or do anything like that and kind of ruin the project. That wouldn't really happen. So it's quite amazing to create something and then you step away. Like when I got hired at Mozilla, I probably stepped away for 3 months and said hi on the mailing list twice, and then I come back and have half of the new release is already done. So it's an interesting situation when it's self-driven and self-creating as a community.
Very cool. Okay, and I've got to ask this because I'm curious about it. What is embarrassment-driven development?
Oh, this is a long time ago. I gave a keynote at the Python conference, and one of the things we talked about how one of the ways we do development is that we demonstrate. It's kind of like you want to show something to somebody at a conference. And if you're on stage trying to show this thing, it better be good, right? So it's kind of putting your work out in front of others creates this incredible drive to make it really good and not embarrass yourself in front of other people. So, and some other projects have, you know, started using that term as a, it's a flippant term, right? It's more of a, if you want to be in front of people, show off your product, you really go the extra mile to fix the last 10% of the, you know, UI problems or performance problems, because you want to be in state and show something really good.
I probably should have asked this pretty early on, but are there big websites that we know about as consumers that use Plone behind the scenes that you can talk about?
So I guess one would be Discover Magazine, if you know those.
It's
a kind of science. Yeah. So they run Plone. I'm actually ironically not the person to ask about this, because I don't follow the new, like, which new sites are deployed on these things. I know which kind of sites were deployed back when I was doing Plone full time. But if you go to the website plone.net, which is our kind of professional network site, you can go to the section there that talks about which sites are running Plone right now. It's heavily used in government and education. So the Brazil government in particular uses Plone pretty much everywhere. CIA, FBI both use Plone. Amnesty International, Salon, you see there. So we have a very interesting list of customers, everything from, you know, FBI and CIA and the military all the way up to nonprofits, which are also very, very big on Plone. So,
wow. Wow. That must make you feel pretty proud that something you started 10 years ago is in wide deployment now.
It's funny, right? And one of the things I always think is funny about it is that Plone would not have happened if I wasn't living in Norway, because Norway was taking care of me. You know, it's a scary socialist country, right? We have healthcare and stuff. And we get unemployment benefits. And at the time when I didn't have a job, they made sure that I had a place to live and food to eat and an internet connection. And that's how you change the world.
Wow. Wow. And where's Plone headed? Changing more of the world or where?
Changing different parts of the world. So it's, one of the things that has happened now is that designers or design agencies very often pick the content management solution for people. If you want a new website, you go to a design agency and you say, we need a new website. And then they will pick the system they're comfortable with. So there's a massive upside in making your system easy to use for people that are not really programmers and can easily make it look the way it should look like and easily deploy the content in there. So that's our next main challenge, I think, is making it more friendly to developers that are really not developers in the sense that we think about developers.
And that's an ongoing project for you, and it's slowly coming about?
Yes, it's the main focal point of the next upcoming Plone release, which is Plone 5.
Cool. And, okay, the usual traditional questions, Emacs or VI?
I would say I'm a VI guy. I could never figure out the keyboard shortcut to quit Emacs. So that's my bar, right? So I'm at a terminal. I'm editing a file, but I can't figure out how to get out of the editor. And VI was the first one where I could figure out how to get out of it. So I stuck with VI.
And I know the Perl versus Python question already.
Absolutely Python. Who uses Perl? I know.
You know how to invent. Yeah.
Exactly. I know how to get you up better. But really, I'm more of a very front-end user guy. So I use TextMate and other editors that are not really editors by the, you know, kind of developer sense of the definition. But VI is serviceable for me.
I think we've got a pretty good sense of Plone having talked to you for a bit here. Is there anything that you're really burning that we seem to have left out?
Not really, I think. I'd like to mention that, again, that we have a fantastic community. And if you have any questions, there is a Plone chat room that is really active and has a lot of good people in it. So if you have quick questions about whether a project you're trying to do is appropriate for Plone, just go in and ask people. And they will tell you no if it is actually not the appropriate thing to do. So if you're wondering if you were going to use Plone for, you know, an internet or a company website or to solve a particular problem, do go and ask the community, because they're really, really good at figuring out your needs.
Very good. Very good. Well, I really appreciate you coming on today to talk about Plone. I'm certainly fascinated by it now. Now I'm wishing I had access to it back a couple of years ago when I was trying to do this workflow project for this client of mine. But that's okay. You know, now I know about it. Now when the next client that comes along, I'm a lot smarter about this. It should be a lot easier this next time. So appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you.
Thank you. So that's Alex Leamy. I forgot to ask him how to pronounce his last name. Leamy, I guess. Who is one of the founders of the Plone Project. Talk to us about all the details of that. Pretty fascinating, huh, Dan?
Yeah, very interesting. I have to confess, I didn't know a lot about Plone before reading up about it this week. But it seems to be very popular in the enterprise environment. I was interested he talked about intranets specifically, which would explain why I haven't encountered it when people ask me to make them a blog or something. It kind of makes sense. But yeah, very interesting. And the fact that it's all self-contained almost as well, that you would pretty much just get yourself a virtual machine to deploy it on. And rather than the traditional going to find PHP web hosting or whatever.
Well, and it's probably standard package installs for the typical Linux and BSD distributions, I'm sure, too. So I'm sure there are ways to get it on your system if you really want it on your system, right? Must be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. I would have thought so.
Cool. Okay, so I would usually do about this time here is I pull up my spreadsheet of the upcoming guests, which I will rattle off now. We have next week. I'm really looking forward to this. I say this every time now because we've got such great guests all the time now. I'm really looking forward to this. Ross Boucher. Oh, I don't know how to pronounce his name either. I am so horrible with names. Is coming to talk to us about the cappuccino, I guess, like the coffee drink. Cappuccino framework, which is Objective-J. It's a full web framework that runs in JavaScript in your browser side. And you actually, I didn't know this, but it actually loads the Objective-J code, which looks like Objective-C code, and translates it on the fly in the browser. So the browser actually has the compiler for Objective-J to JavaScript. Way cool. So I'm looking forward to this. Should be really interesting. Great user interfaces from it. Very classy, smooth, looking a lot like your normal OS X desktop or your Next Step desktop. It should be a very fascinating show. Got Aaron Siegel co-hosting on that one. After that, we've got John Newton and Luis Sala. I keep wanting to say Salsa there. Talking about Alfresco, which is a different kind of content management system, more towards traditional business means from what I understand. Co-host Simon Phipps coming back for that one. I love that. Darren Schreiber is going to join us for the 2600 Hertz project, which is telephony end-to-end, all sorts of integration of things like asterisk and end-user boxes and things like that. Aaron Newcomb's coming back to co-host that. And that's all I have on the short list. Actually, John O'Bacon said at some point he's going to talk to me about his new music project. Severed Fifth is doing some new open source music. I'll be taping that off hours. Won't be in the normal slots because he can't make this slot anymore. That's why he's not the co-host anymore here. Patrick Michaud is going to talk to us about the Perl 6 project Rakuto, which is a full implementation of what we know so far about Perl 6. Again, that's going to be taped off hours because I think both of those slides are going to go in when I'm actually out on a cruise ship. So we have got that kind of stuff going on. Many other people on the shortlist, twit.tv/floss. There's a spreadsheet linked from there. If you see people on that list that you'd like to have move up the list, just have them write me, email me. My address there is merlin@stonehenge.com. But we've got a lot of people that will probably slot it in November, December by the time I air this show next week. So you'll find out some more people that we've got on the very short list. Dan, what's going on with you? Where can we find you?
Yeah, you can find me at danlynch.org, which is spelled L-Y-N-C-H, Lynch. And you can find links to my Twitter accounts, Identica, all that kind of stuff on there. But it's funny you mentioned John O'Bacon, actually, because one of the big things I've been doing in the last few days is I'm a sound engineer as well as one of my other kind of feathers to my bow, if you like. And I've been mastering his new album for him in my studio, which I'm sat in right now. So his new Creative Commons metal album has been mastered by my fair hand. So if it sounds terrible, you know who to blame. You know who to blame. Anyway. Well, I think Johnny should take some of the blame, but you know who to blame. So yeah, check that out as well. I believe he's got a gig coming up on Friday as well, if you're in the Bay Area. Their first ever gig could be good. So cool. Check that out as well.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, you can only do so much with the material there, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. There's an old saying, which I couldn't say on a family show, but I'll tell you later.
off air. Okay.
Yeah.
And also, if you mentioned your Identica, if you follow me on Twitter at MERLYN, you'll see that from time to time I do live streaming of various conference events and things that are around me. And in fact, I'm going to be live streaming karaoke tonight for those that are watching the live show. Of course, by the time you hear this on the podcast, it probably won't be live anymore. But twitter.com/Merlin, MERLYN. Dan, on Linux Outlaws, are you going to talk about the Emerald Meltdown or LibreOffice, or have you already?
We haven't yet. No, we certainly will do in the next show. Actually, we record on Monday nights in the UK, and this news, big news about the open office situation came out, I think, literally a few hours after we'd recorded, which I suppose is the way of things. There's not much you can do about it, but we'll certainly cover it next week. Yeah, big news. Lots of people excited about the new foundation and possibility for moving open office forward. So that's positive, I think.
And we'll probably do a show on it eventually on Floss Weekly, too. But, you know, it's a timely thing. So, you know, I love the fact that Linux Outlaws, you've got your studious German to go out and research all the great new stuff that comes up. And I don't have to cover all that. So I listen to your show on a regular basis. And I encourage all of our audience that wants timely news stories about the open source community to listen to Linux Outlaws. Please do that.
Yeah, thank you very much. And hopefully the big stories won't come out, you know, 2 hours after we finish recording. That's fine. I suppose that's the breaks, you know, that's the way it goes sometimes.
You got to cut it off at somewhere, so that's the way it is. So any last words for our audience, Dan, before we get going here?
No, I don't think so. Lovely to talk to you again, and I'll see you in the near future, I presume.
I will be bringing you back for a future show. I absolutely know that. And for all the rest of you out there listening, I'll see you all again next time on Floss Weekly.